problem for today is moving from insanity in sport, fitness, and movement to sanity in sport, fitness, and movement. I want you to know that it's a timely subject because even Time is talking about it, and ironically, talking about it in terms of women. But also, our Lutheran colleges are talking about it. They're talking about sport, athletics, on the educational level. So it's definitely a timely sort of subject. Sports Illustrated is even talking about it in terms of women, and I'll talk about that later. I generally try to wake up my class with a quote. This isn't kind of a wake-up quote because it's from Susie Langer's Philosophy in a New Key, but I think it fits what I want to talk about today. Her statement is, quote, "The less we move, the less we know about this meaningful area of living, and the fabric of our lives is accordingly impoverished." And that's really why I selected this topic. I think it's a crucial issue facing Americans today. The challenge of the technological age has changed our way of life. Fitness really is not necessary to survive in terms of our work lives for most of us. We're not on the farms. We're not having to do the drudgery of work. And certainly for me, that has tons of positives. But for my body, it does not. And so we need some artificial ways of moving our bodies, because movement and organic movement is really how we were made. It's a necessary part of our being. I also see it as crucial because we are surrounded by a lifestyle and a value system that mirrors society, and society says sport is one of the fads of our society. Obviously, my profession is sport, and so I believe in it. But in the process of believing in it, I am appalled by what we are doing with sport and what's happening to us as a society, as individual people. But it's crucial because we're going to have so much time in the future. And in fact, we really have so much time now. And how we use that time is going to determine the kind of a life we're going to live, whether we have it more abundantly or whether we in fact waste our time, and particularly our God-given time. The work ethic of the past needs to die in some ways, but in its place, as I see it, is the freedom to have a fuller life. And that certainly Holden is one of the places that gives such a thing. We all could be meeting in a retreat center in the middle of USC Stadium and carrying on the same kind of thing, but we're not going to have the same kind of a result. The setting is part of the reflection, it's part of the self-renewal, it's part of a new way of life. And I think that Gertrude, in her talk the other day, hit it right. New every day, and that one of the ways of doing this is through sport. But just as everything in life can have its good and its bad, I think that we have some problems in sport, some problems that's going to affect your kids a great deal, and already have. Problems in Little League, problems in value systems and what we're doing to kids, what we're doing to college women, as a matter of fact, as we move into the scholarship era. I've been a member of the Ethics and Eligibility Committee of Women's Athletics. The AIEW is a counterpart of the NC2A. And some of you know of their activities, and that in fact they are before a house committee for the way they conduct their business. And all because of what we're doing in sport in the values area. And so that's why I saw it as significant today. Because we're going to have time for it, but in so doing it, we need to evaluate what we are doing. If we look at the Romans had tons and tons of time. What did they select to do with their leisure time? You great students of history, what did they do with their time?
Games, sports, games.
They watched games. What kind of games? Nice tennis games, gymnastic, bloody blood and guts. And look at violence in sport today in our own society. Secretively, and some of us openly, wait for that moment when the glove hits the nose of the other guy, when the ice hockey elbow goes hard, and the punishment you're happy about, but not as happy as we look around as the initial elbow. On the football fields, we're taking the helmets when nobody's looking. And what are we teaching our kids in this? And it's one of the areas that I think we have to think about pretty carefully. Are we going the Roman way in sport? The gladiator kinds of fights. We are adding more and more kinds of sporting events. And now we like to watch professional basketball because it has a lot more pushing and shoving. And we're inventing the box game. Box lacrosse. Is that what it is? I think it's box lacrosse. Nothing could be worse. You play lacrosse in a smaller space. So you can imagine with seven men, and primarily men, all in their outfits on a smaller than gymnasium floor. And you've got violence in sport. And you've got something, I think, to be concerned about. And so sport is one of my topics for today. And in sport, I'm talking about, as my methodology teacher says, you always define your terms. And so in sport, I'm talking about games. I'm talking about myself against the mountain. I'm talking about myself in track, in field, golf, tennis. I'm talking about myself in any sporting activity in which physical activity or movement is a prime target. So I'm not on chess this morning. In fact, I'm never on chess because I'm no good. Scrabble either, by the way. But those are recreational pursuits that I think have a place in our society. But today I'm interested in all the kinds of sporting activities that takes physical activity. And I'm also putting in there what I call athletics. And athletics is a hierarchy of sport, which has lots and lots of positive values as I see it. I missed it in my youth, I've observed it, and I've tried to get it in the high schools and in the colleges, and I believe in it. But we're talking now about the upper 5 to 10% of our population that can be in athletics. And we need to remember this when we start building stadiums, when we start pushing our children into Little League, American League, baseball leagues, and on up. And when we stay home from our vacations so Johnny can be in Little League play. We need to remember what the purpose of athletics can be. I also believe in the Olympics, but it's athletics. It's not plain everyday sport game. And as you begin to make your value systems with your children, it's one of the things we need to think about. I also see sport as not having to be only competitive, but cooperation. And we can see that kids want this. If any of you played in sandlot games, how did you divide up your teams? Even or uneven? As even as you could. And it's ironic to me that we talk about competition as though it is a violent kill. The sandlot games, those kids don't want to know the outcome. They want to play. And that's one of the things I think is play, is when they divide up even. And they'll do that of their own accord. What happens when we stick an official there then? Suddenly, everybody was able, all of you, women that got to play and you gentlemen, you took care of your problems in the sandlot. If Johnny cheated, you had some choices. One is to send him home unless he owned the toy. But another was to tantalize him into more fair play. You had your means and your game continued. Rarely did your game break up because of the officials. But now, part of the game is to how to cheat and not have the officials see it. It somehow isn't cheating if the officials don't see it. And that's a value thing you need to think about with your children, your grandchildren, in your teaching world. That cheating has become a part of the game as opposed to outside the rules and something that you simply wouldn't do. It's almost worse than cheating in solitaire. because you are affecting so many other kinds of lives and thoughts. So that's all part of the sport and the athletics. I also put professional sport under athletics. I have trouble with professional sport primarily because of the price tag. Do you realize how much we're spending on professional sport and what one little soccer player got? Something like $2 million to kick the silly soccer ball. No, I love to kick the soccer ball, but $2 million? I bet you don't know more than five people in this whole country who make $2 million. And here's someone at play, theoretically doing it, a football player. Now, their lives and longevity are not long, and we have some pretty unhappy men who are ex-football players. In fact, one of my grad students is doing a study on it, and they're pretty unhappy men, really very unhappy, by virtue of having dedicated their lives for a very short time to this risk kind of sport. And even worse to me in athletics is what we've done to the blacks. The black men in our society who dedicated their lives to the hoop. And they were going to get out of the ghetto only through the hoop. And now we're talking about 2 million throughout the last 10 years of black boys going to get out of the ghetto. How many of them make it? In professional sport, we have approximately 400 black men who are making good money in sport. In college, counting football and basketball, we have another probably 45,000 black youth. And out of that 45,000, how many of them graduated from college? Not 20,000 of them. And so it is not a waste to go to school and not finish, but it is a waste if you went to school, did not collect the credits, and worse, did not collect the knowledge that a $6,000 a year college education could have given them. Think of all of you that would have loved just even a part of that $6,000 education. And it's not that black youth's fault. It's our fault for how we have dealt with sport and made it a god. If there's any god in our society besides money, it is sport. And yet, I think it's a God-given kind of freedom that we have in our country to play sport. But we need to be careful about what we're doing with it in the violence area, in the values area, and certainly in the athletic area in it. My second area, and I'll return to sport in a minute, is fitness. And that's one of my very favorite areas because every one of you sitting here can be more fit than you are. Well, 90% of you can be more fit than you are. Instead, what has happened is the insanity of weight watching, diets, fads, exercising for 2 weeks and giving it up, coming up here and running up a mountain, and you haven't done a thing before. Our bodies take time. You have to prepare them for fitness. Now, jogging is another example. I think jogging is a significantly wonderful thing that's happened in our society. But it isn't wonderful if you started at 50, you go 3 miles, and you drop dead. And so care has to be taken. You're insane to start at 45 without a doctor's examination first and working up to it. If all of you started with absolutely a whole watermelon without ever having eaten a watermelon, you can imagine the problem in your system. Actually, a pound of cherries is the same problem. Of which I know better. But the first thing I did when I got to Wenatchee is to buy my pound of cherries. The second thing you know. But it's an example of what we tend to do in our society. And it's an insane sort of thing, and yet fitness itself is a great thing. And by fitness, I'm talking about our cardiovascular systems, where you can breathe deep and not have your lungs hurt here, where you can walk at least a 10 mile without breathing hard. That's the beginning of a kind of fitness. And the beginning of jogging, the Royal Canadian Air Force one, aerobics, they're all good things. Almost all of the exercise programs that you see, if you do them in moderation, they are good. There are a few that have exercises that aren't good for you. Some for women that have leg raising and lowering slowly, and our backs, which already have lumbar lordosis, are going to hurt, but you're going to know it soon. And as soon as something really hurts, either you did too much too soon, or it's not a good exercise. And we do have a lot of spas, a lot of these health organizations, which also I see as insane, in that you can do it in your bedroom for free, and you're out paying $2,000 to do it, and maybe one extra rope that they give you. You can buy a record. The rhythmic aerobics is an exciting new area that I can't do, but that some of your kids can, and it's a great kind of exercise. Strength is another part of fitness, and the only way you're going to get that is to do it. And strength is by adding, weightlifting is a form of strength, but running in place develops strength. Doing 5 more push-ups than you did yesterday, or 1 more, would you believe, will help. Any kind of exercise that puts stress on the muscle can give us strength. Flexibility is part of strength, or is part of fitness, which I think is significant. But we don't need tons of flexibility. If there's any insanity, it's trying to put your whole hand on the floor with your knees straight, particularly if you're short. Your hamstrings simply aren't going to stretch out, and our muscles are like rubber bands. Once you've overstretched them, you're going to know it. So flexibility is easy to get, easy to lose, so you do it slowly, but you don't do it beyond the normal range. Most of us have no need of getting our whole hands on the floor. We have no need of doing sit-ups all the way with our heads down to our toes. So when you think of flexibility, you just want enough to be able to keep the old joints moving. And it'll help in your arthritis. It'll help in generally, before you play tennis, it is a good idea to get a little flexibility in that old shoulder as you're going. Weekend athletes, I ask that you really prepare yourself for the weekend by 3 days a week of exercise, for example. That gives you the background for being able to play. I don't like to exercise, but if it rains enough days, and if I don't play tennis enough days, then I see exercise as an alternative for my fitness. But the fads, no. And for weight control, perhaps all of you have heard the liquid protein problems that have occurred. And it's a serious problem. They're not just talking about it. You should be careful of your children's, and particularly your girls that want to go on diets. Be careful of them. They are growing. They still have lots of opportunity for mononucleosis, and it'll come sure as shooting if you let them get run down. So be careful of anybody that's on a diet. And the same with you people. Again, we're in such a hurry as Americans that we want to lose that 10 pounds this week. Not next week, not in the month. Yeah, always in a rush for it. You got it through time and fun. I hope, as long as you get it, that it was fun in the process of getting it. And it was enjoyable. But the whole secret, as all of you well know, is the input of food less than the output of energy or of exercise is going to result in it, guaranteed. While if you exercise and diet, it is the combination that is the winning combination. And as you cut down on exercise, you need to cut down on food. It's as simple as that. And if you want to diet, that you diet along with the exercise and take care. The third area that I give the general picture before we move back to sport and exercise is what I call movement. And in movement, I'm talking about children and primarily. The insanity of how we teach movement to children and the kinds of movement. The specialized movement, for example, of a baseball player. Unfortunately, what we have learned is that activity is specific to the learning process. I cannot teach Johnny baseball and expect him to be able to play tennis, golf, swim, track and field. If I teach him baseball, I will teach him how to run, and therefore I may be able to transfer it. I will teach him how to bat, and I may be able to do the forehand drive better, but it's not going to do anything from a backhand drive in the tennis world. It's specific. And so what I'm saying is when we begin to concentrate with children early on one sport, that we're handicapping them for life. Because the very best learning time is between 9 and 12. It's also why I believe movement patterns ought to be taught by experts in the elementary school and forget them in the high school. Forget us on the college level. Do it in grades 1 through 6. Then you've got them. And teach them general patterns. Movement exploration or movement education. If any of you have heard of it, and those of you in elementary I'm sure have, it's really exposing them to learning about their bodies. Whether it's a fat body, a skinny body, a coordinated body, but that body, unless mentally and physically completely retarded, can learn. And all retarded children can learn. As a matter of fact, in our mainstreaming that we're going to be doing, very physically handicapped children can learn to play. And it is good for all of them to do this. But with the children, they need to learn all of the movement patterns at once or during their first 3 years in school. And they need to learn to do it as individuals. And that's where the self-esteem comes and where they don't learn that little girls can't throw. If nobody tells little girls that they can't throw, then they don't know that they can't throw, and they'll learn to throw. I would ask, however, that Daddy teaches them if you learned like a girl, because we have studies that show if mother teaches them and mother throws like this, that's how both little girl and little boy is. So you fathers need to be teaching your daughters the sporting activities, unless you happen to have been fortunate enough to have the sport experience yourself as girls and women. But they need to learn to do all of these without knowing that fat boys can't run. Well, the fat boy understands and learns it within himself. He doesn't need to have a teacher put him at the end of the line or to have the kids choose teams and he's last to find out. There is something that that boy can learn to do in terms of other kinds of exercises, and even in terms of learning about his body, learning about space. If he's got good hand and eye coordination, he can hit that baseball to kingdom come, whether he can get the base on time or not. And if he hits it far enough, he's going to get the base. Or he can learn to kick the ball. There is no reason why a plump boy cannot play soccer, for example. He's not going to get there as fast, but he can be a fullback. And so you adjust with whatever kind of child you have, that's what you adjust to. And just as I want all children to have music and art, being exposed to it, not knowing that lots of people don't like it, then they are going to enjoy it. And so if there's anything I'd also like to have you take home is be sure that you have an elementary teacher that's not teaching 13 hours a day, 15 minutes apiece, for a whole class, and they've never heard of Mary Jane or Johnny or Jack. They're just one big mass of kids. That's not how we're going to teach kids. It's got to be eyeball to eyeball when you make a correction. You can't say, all of you who happen to be stepping forward with your wrong foot should do this. You know, they're just not going to get it. We can't mass teach them. And that's where you parents are so important. If we're going to have a culture, and we know we are, of time to play, then we want to give them experiences where they'll play and they won't be spectators all of their lives. And that's where the basic movements are so important. And all of the low organized games, all the games that we have, a 12-year-old kid is able to learn. There isn't one game, even pole vaulting, which takes 46 different movements when they take a study of it, a 12-year-old girl or boy, right now boy, and only girls who don't know that they've been deprived will be able to do it, but most of them haven't had enough of the right kinds of experiences. But they can do the pole vault. That's the most complicated. Second most complicated, or near complicated, is the serve and tennis. Do you realize that on the serve and tennis you're doing about 22 different actions. So when you've had trouble, don't worry about it. It's a tough thing to learn. But the 12-year-old, the 10-year-old can learn it. Maybe they need a Prince's racket with the larger hole. And there's a lot of you people that could do, by the way, commercial with the Prince's racket. And it's going to be acceptable in tournament play. But if we think about this kind of movement for our children, and sure, let them play Little League. But let them play Little League only if it is a fun activity and not an extension of yourself. And if Johnny loses, he cries. Because he wants to please you, not because he cared so much that he lost. Or the first thing that happens when Johnny comes home, if Father says, not, how was the game? Was it fun? But did you win? And ironically, I was reading on this, and the first thing I said to my nephew after a game was, well, did you win? Oh, you're really great. Your methods are great. Your practical application is not so good. But I think that's what our society, you know, is made of that. I'm not against competition. I want them, as they begin to be interested in it, I want them to strive for perfection. But I want it to be perfection at their capability. So when they play a tennis game and they really played well, but they lost, they're perfectly satisfied within. And that's where we as physical educators have failed. Because so many of our physical educators are well-skilled, highly coordinated men and women. And so that's what we believe the goal sort of is. And we're just now learning through some from this new games idea that there are other kinds of ways of learning and of progressing. So think twice before you encourage if a boy or the girls now are not interested in that kind of a movement experience. We want to give them movement experiences that will free them for whatever sport it is they want to do. And they will find their sport. There's an awful lot of kids with eye problems, with inability really to see. And they not only will read poorly, but did you ever try to hit a softball with one eye closed? And that's the kind of vision that a lot of our children have. 17% of our children in grades 1 through 6 have some kind of eye deficiencies in terms of nearsighted, farsighted, astigmatism, something that's going to affect whether they can bat or not. And that's when it gets scary, that batting becomes all significant. Or even a small ball. You know, if you're not seeing it, you can be as coordinated as the world is and not be able to catch it. But what we've judged children on is ball handling skills, not looking at the body from in to out on their movement patterns. And we haven't worried about teaching them how to run. I'd venture to say that half of you don't know how to run. And so naturally the children don't. Now, half of you don't want to run either. But that's a whole other cultural problem that we've had that I think you know the value of it. And again, that's what I think becomes significant. And so those are our three areas. Now what I'd like to do is flip back to the sports world again and get a little conversation perhaps on some of the sport problems that I really see as serious problems. I've mentioned the blacks as a serious problem. I've mentioned the money that we are putting in as a serious problem. But now we move into something that is going to be significant to some of you, interscholastic play, intercollegiate play, and the highly competitive setting. I believe that in this area, we need to be far more careful about the whole concept of cheating. That in our value systems, we are beginning to cheat purposefully in a game, and that a game ceases to be a game. On the interscholastic level, I've been working with women primarily, and you know, we're the peer group. What do you suppose is happening with this un-peer group in sport over here? Well, we're all the same. Women were not given by chance less sinful beings. And not even less sinful beings in those of us who are competitive. It's really all the same. and watching us take senior high school girls and offering them the same thing we're offering men, cars, a little extra trip home, a job when they're through, an assistant coaching job. That's what we're doing in athletics. And I know because I'm sitting as chair trying to prevent this from happening with women. But it was absolutely appalling to me. And I certainly thought, well, it's not happening on the high school level. I have seen with girls now, in Catholic high schools have moved whole families out of D.C. to Baltimore so that they can go to the private Catholic school, of course because they're Catholic, but because she also happens to be 6'3". And so father is working as a custodian at the school while she goes to school. And that's the kind of thing that I think we need to begin to worry about. When it's happening in a brand new area, women in sports, 6 years old in terms of intercollegiate sports, but the full ride, the recruitment violations, and I don't like the article, but too far, too fast for women in sport. And look at her look. And that's the coach that's coaching your sweet little girl. And I think that we need to evaluate, and it's a time where the way the girls have played, I think there's lots of possibilities for mingling some of the fun part that girls have had that were in sport and some of the really competitive kinds of things that we've had in sport. And that we need to begin to look at what's happening, what's happening at your alma mater in terms of the whole recruitment kind of game, that it's a scary kind of game. Or the 12-year-old boy whose arm aches, and according to one of my students in my graduate class, it happened. It is the finals of the World Series in, where is it, someplace in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
The boy 4 years ago had a shot put in his elbow in order to continue to pitch. 12 years old. What are we doing in the sports world? And all of you, or at least all of you men, can tell of happenings on the college level. The whole dope scene. High school boys are taking, what are the uppers? Some of the uppers, anyway, in dope for the... What? Right, right. On the high school level, and even 18-year-old boys in college who are pretty much young boys are being given kinds of dope just to win. There can be no other reason for it than the desire to win, because it's not just the desire to perfect the self. And these are the things that are happening. And some of you could give, I'm sure, some of your own. Some of you can also watch fathers. And now we have what I call tennis mothers. If any of you know some rich children that have been on the girl circuit, tennis mothers are by far the worst. Because they definitely have been deprived in the past and they want to live through their daughter. Now, fortunately, dad doesn't see tennis quite the same as mother does. And so he's off with his son somewhere if he has one. But the fathers of basketball girls, they're really worse. Next to them, because they are trying to live through their daughter or the father. And I think that fathers ought to be proud of their sons. But be sure that your son wants to play football, and it's not that you want to play football. As you're gathering him into his life. And we have signs of that sort of thing happening in the whole kind of world of sport. Then my next area for you will hit some of you, I hope, and that's spectatoritis. And I'm 100% against spectatoritis. And I know it's happening because the Super Bowl 1 year ago in New York City, the water supply at the end of the first half of the football game went zip. What do you suppose happened? Flushing Johns. And the water supply in New York City demonstrated that there had to be thousands and thousands of people that also took their break from the Super Bowl game and went to the Johns. And it's a sign sort of the times. How many watched the New Year's game? And it's not so bad just to watch the New Year's game, but it's the beer and the pretzels and the staring at the tube, until we probably, in sport, should have been born with two big eyes, one large seat, period. And that may be just what's happening to some. We're living in the middle third of our body, and television is one of the robbers of activity. Now, it has a very positive. Some of your children may well have gotten interested in gymnastics, in some of the Olympic kinds of games, but that only happens one in 4 years. But that's going to cost $80 million for us to see the 1984 Olympics, which is also a price tag that's terribly high. Not to mention that you're going to learn to drink beer, wash your hair very carefully, ladies, so that you'll have a boyfriend, drink Coca-Cola, and have bright teeth for the male, and the male to have plenty of beer and smoke cigarettes. And all in order that we then look at a sport. But I think when you look at the Roman society, you have to begin to worry about spectatoritis. Because we tend to be watching more than we're doing, and remember that we were made for organic action. You know, even if you only jump up and exercise between quarters or between halves, or certainly that whole minute that it takes to decide what you're going to do next in the football game, or lots of time in the baseball game, as I see it. Obviously, you see my love. It's not baseball. But I think it's a serious problem. Besides the amount of money we're spending, which bothers me, it doesn't bother me half as much as that you're not out doing something. All of us have at least 4 or 5 months, even if you're in northern Minnesota, for being outside. And if you are inside watching, then we aren't doing those kinds of things for our body. And for your children, I'm worried in terms of the cheating game and the violence that's going on in the sport kind of world, where winning is everything. And as Vince Lombardi is supposed to have said, and everybody says he doesn't say, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. And that kind of concept, you can love sport and you can still want it to be played within the spirit that it is in it. And I think that is an important area. The final area in sport, and then maybe we can discuss some other kinds of thoughts you may have before we go to fitness for a minute, is gambling. Do you realize how much money we are spending in gambling over the weekly football games? I don't mind gambling, but the gambling that is happening, and not with you people, I would venture a guess, but with those you're working with and those all about you, is that it is a way of life, and that they are gambling large sums, not just in horse racing, but at the football games and at the basketball games, and that we are still in the process of having points shaved and games being given away by virtue of and because of the gambling world, and that we need to be aware of it and in some ways not make ourselves a part of it. I have no problem with a dollar bet game, but I have a lot of problems when it goes on to the $100 and $200 and our youth can't afford it. And it's some of our youth who are doing this. It's hard enough with the new, at least Maryland and New Jersey, and I don't know if you people have the lottery, but it's the poor and our group that are paying for the lotteries and we can't afford it. I was waiting in line for a sandwich in a part of Maryland the other day, and I thought, you know, this must be a great place, because if it's full, you know, you're going to get good food. They were all in line for the lottery, and were spending $10 to $15 to pay on the lottery, a form of sport, but then they went on to pay for the horses and on to the football game and the basketball game. And so gambling is big business, and we need to know about it when they begin to probe in it, because some of our youth are getting caught in this kind of a scene. So in the sports world, I think that's all the negatives that I can think of in sport. And with all of it, I say we still ought to have it. and we ought to have all parts of it, but in moderation and with understanding of what kinds of things can happen. Anybody have any questions or helps or comments in the whole area of sport, either in the children or in this?
I just want to say I was astonished to go to a Little League game. I was a high school principal, so I watched high school people. But I went to a Little League game because my friends had a boy. And these fathers sitting there, well, why didn't you hit it? Why didn't you do this? Or mothers. What does that do to children? I was just appalled. And I told these parents.
Remember, we're only going to have 5% of those that are going to be great athletes in it. Canada is doing something with soccer, which I think is very interesting and exciting. They're making leagues of 9 through 12-year-old, both boys and girls, and they have like four sets of pennies, green, red, yellow, and blue. And you play for 5 minutes, and you come off the field, and a coach or somebody gives you help in it. You're switching pennies. And so you keep score, but you really only keep score for the fun of the game because you're on a different team every 5 minutes. And you're also getting help on the side without having them, say, screaming at them and pinpointing them, which unfortunately I've done for years on my own teaching because I have 8 courts. And it's always the girl way down at the other court that I want to tell what she's doing. But we know by our studies that this is not good for kids and that the fear of failure will make them go away from the game. But the Canadians found the first year, half of the children that had played the year before didn't play when they moved into this new kind of game. The next year, about 75% were back, and they were on the third or fourth year in which they figured the numbers then had increased beyond which the other numbers had. And you could see the progress of the kids. The kids were still learning to play a good brand of soccer. But they were all mingling with all sorts of skills. And then they also did have some homogeneous grouping in which skill level, so that the better ones could progress and the other ones could work on the strategy within their ability group, which also is pretty exciting to be able to do, that you aren't always being pushed and shoved by the absolute top level. And I think what we also need to remember in sport is if a kid can't read, 75% of the kids, if they don't do a lot of reading out loud, will not know that the kid can't read. But out on the playground, they all know if the kid can't play. And it hasn't mattered for girls, but it will, and it's one of those things that we sacrifice in order to be able to have sport for girls. They too will go into the same, only it's going to be tough to call them sissies because it's not going to matter. But that's kind of the symbol we give to the boy. And I definitely think that both the elementary and the physical educators are to blame. But because it can be seen, it becomes more significant that we find something that they can succeed in. And that's where you parents are important, that you don't have your boy playing in something that he is not going to succeed in. It's not going to build character in a positive kind of sense. It's going to build hatred and fear. And, you know, we really don't want to do that to our kids.
We ran into the problem with these hosting parents, coaches, the high school coaches. We have a race situation in our area. And poor white boy, really and truly, is not given the chance that some of the other races are. And we very definitely ran into this thing.
Well, there's no question that coaches, besides parents, coaches on the high school level initiate the problem because they want to win, and in some high schools, the school board has made it that they have to win. And on colleges, hey, there's no question in my mind, but that's what they're there for, that they must win. And it's interesting to watch that happening in women's athletics, unfortunately, that the winning syndrome begins to be most prevalent. And it's certainly in desire has been the black boy that did succeed in sport because of all the things he's willing to do. He's willing to discipline himself to the uttermost in order to succeed, which makes me really think that black children and black boys could have been doctors, lawyers, merchants, chiefs by virtue even being handicapped by birth, of their motivation. Because they're motivated in that sports field, and granted it's more fun, but they're motivated beyond fun. They discipline and hurt their bodies to do it. And some of the coaches believe in stereotyping that they're the only ones that are tough enough to do that. And I think when winning is the only thing, you're going to have all of this kind of a bias or prejudice. And that it has to be fought by the community and a desire for the community to expand their horizons and for building some intramurals. Because of Proposition in California, they didn't cut out interscholastics first. The first thing they're going to cut out in the Los Angeles school systems is intramurals, which is for the next 40%. And that's in women, that's our fault, because we have pushed from the top first. And now we need to go back and look at intramurals. Or boys, too. How many of your boys have a chance for intramurals? And this is the normal 40% of the kids. And that's the fault of the competitive kind of society. But what is happening, I think, that's great, is the summer program. That the summer programs in an awful lot of the communities for both girls and boys, and even for adults, is one of the greatest kinds of things that is happening. Anything and any time you can get either yourself or your children to learn a sport by taking a class, my profession, of course, but I think it is important to do. It's really tough to teach your own child, for example, beyond about that 12 or 13. And husbands, to teach your wives to golf, I've seen too many problems with it. In the first place, you know, now because of our lack of past, we've got more problems in learning. Women definitely take longer to learn a sport if they haven't been exposed to it. You can't expect to learn to play golf as fast as your husband has, just by virtue of deprived in the past. The same with tennis. But once you learn it, then there is no problem that makes you not able to carry on. But it does mean you need more attention. All our girls who have missed it through grades 1-6 need more attention because we haven't exposed them to it. And although things are specific, things like running, throwing, and leaping are normal kinds of activities that boys have been encouraged in. Other areas within the sport world that...
I have been in music for a large share of my life. And I have a lot of anti-sport feeling because of the fight that exists in so many school systems over who's going to get a student, the music department or the athletic department. You understand what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, yes.
And to me, this is ridiculous because of two departments that can really complement each other. These are two. And I teach elementary music now for part of the time, and I use as much physical body movement in teaching music to children, and they love it. And fortunately, they have some elementary teachers, particularly in kindergarten in one school, who also believe in this. But the PE teacher comes once or twice a week. He has been teaching this for 15 years. They had a chance to have a gal from the Iowa Arts Council come in and demonstrate to the teachers what might be done with these children, at least for an hour or two. She was with each class. He was out of the room while she was doing this. And the only thing they do in PE is to get into teams. And if you didn't win, this is first and second grade now, if they didn't win, that upsets their whole day. They come back to the room. The teachers have, I've discussed this with them. We discussed it because our daughter came home, and she's quite athletic, and came home, how was your day today? Oh, terrible, we lost in the game in PE, you see. And they're developing basketball dribbling skills. And if you have not started to play basketball by the time you were in sixth or seventh grade, there's not a chance that you're going to get to play at all the way through the system.
This is really tough on boys who don't grow, where they are handicapped starting in the seventh grade at least, if they haven't progressed. And a lot of them don't get their coordination, particularly the boys, until 14 or 15. And they could have had an exciting life in the sports world if they had just been willing to keep teams and a lot of them going. I know the music world is a problem, and that's where we really ought to be cooperating in the aerobics kind of area, movement exploration in children. But it's that somebody has made a decision for that child that sport is more important than music. And certainly in my life, I could either take physical education or music. And if any of you sit beside me, you'll know what I took. Never.
Music is not all singing.
No, but that's one of the areas. I also couldn't take band because I wanted to take. And it's certainly in that, up through the junior high level, that we ought to not force choices. Art is the same thing, because all of them is what makes the total kind of person. And then, you can, well, in terms of sport, I think you start with
the elementary,
but you also start with the administrators and with the PTAs. And the problem you're going to find, guess who the administrators are? They're ex-physical education men. Some way or other, they've all decided that. But your community has to decide it. And one of the ways your community decides it is on the intramural level. There are, remember, only 10% of those boys are involved in it. There's 90% of the boys and about 85% or 90% of the girls who are not participating. And those are the ones that have to get together. And I've seen it done in the College Park area, for example. They move to only practicing 3 days a week for the interscholastic teams and 2 days a week plus early morning and noon for the intramurals. And it's a happy group, and we don't and aren't finding all of the problems that we have found on lunch hours and that sort of thing with the children. But it's tough, because remember, our society is based on competition and on the ideal of sport, and we are a reflection of our society. And I really know in my own field that I'm talking on deaf ears half of the time. Even while I really believe, and particularly now where the women have been handicapped in the past, I really believe in intercollegiates. But I also believe in a sport for every girl and every girl for a sport. And that the only way we're going to get it is really through the parents.
I question whether we should even actually work within that system of competition, because it seems to me at least that the spirit of competition belongs more to the spirit of the world than it does to Christ. It doesn't show up very often that there is competition within the Christian world. And I kind of wonder how the Christian men, in raising their family, living their own life, fits into that without becoming part of the world, in the world of competition.
Well, I think competition in and of itself is not bad. It's when it becomes your God that it can be bad, and that music, art, drama, all of them are freedoms of life, and that you can live within Christ in the freedom. Paul uses a great deal of illustrations of sport, and I don't believe he would have used them if it was really a negative aspect. It's when it runs your life, and I've seen it run families, that I think it is difficult. I question some of the competition that we're doing on the junior high levels too, but both in the secular and the sacred sense.
It seems though that you talk about sport and competition, the egos of the community are so caught up in with this. I mean, you can go to your administrators and you say you shouldn't do this, but hey, whether that football team wins or loses, so important, especially in small towns and communities. And plus, varsity teams make money, which is, they bring money in to help support the other sports in the system.
Yeah, actually, they say this on the collegiate level, and it is not true. We've only got 25 large schools in our nation who's making money on football. We lost $50 million in football on the collegiate level last year.
But you don't see the football team going door-to-door selling Fanny Farmer candy and magazines.
Yeah, that's true. They're making more money than the music world.
Joan, there's a spill-off here into professional athletics, and it's changing a whole lot of things. I went to a Minnesota Kicks game last summer, and I thought I wasn't going to get out of there with my life. I never saw so many wild acting people in my life. I thought we were going to be thrown into the arena.
That's what you get for being Christian.
And they were people that were around my age, and they were nuts. An older fellow than I had a bullhorn, and he was agitating all these people with their screens. And when we were in the parking lot, we could hardly get out because somebody had started a fire and the people jumped over your hoods of your car and everything else. I never saw so much stuff. You haven't been back. Then there's another thing with professional football, with the Dallas Cowgirls and all of this sort of thing. It's turned all this sexy business into professional athletics too, you know, that there's a big spill out there with Christian people and what they're paying.
It really isn't much different than the belly dancers of the Egyptian society when you look at the...
Yeah, professional sports is really one of my biggest pet peeves. I think that's where, this is what people see as sport, and this is what they identify with. And so this is what they think kids are into and what they should, this is kind of how we push our kids into things like that, how things get out of perspective, because this is how we see sport. And I just don't get into professional sports at all. And one thing, when I was competing in high school, it was very competitive. And I go to PLU now, and the whole atmosphere is different. And it's really fun. You were talking about cheating in sports. And last year I played field hockey, and it was really fun playing with girls who didn't cheat. And when they did, they'd always call it to the official. Like if they advanced the ball, they'd call it to the official. And I just tell them, why did you do that?
That's what the men say.
It's so refreshing to play with girls who are there to play and to play for the fun of it and to strive for their own best self. That's one thing you're talking about, competition. Competition within yourself instead of competing against other people. It's not so, we're not crushed when we lose, and we lose often. But we have so much fun, and it's just so refreshing, and I love it. So it's just a different perspective than a lot of people see.
I'd like to flip the coin, too. I was so negative a while ago, but we live in a rural setting, and it's sort of unusual. It seems like one family has a piece of a farm down along a creek with a big pasture, and it has become very common for families, whoever wants to come, comes down there, and they're from this high to the old ones, out playing volleyball or softball or whatever happens to be the thing to do, horseshoes, and everyone is accepted at whatever age, whether they can barely hold the bat or not, and it's a very positive experience as far as I have seen, that the family of the church encouraging one another and having a good time together without the fear of losing face.
I think that's one of the solutions that somebody was asking about, in which you can't deal with the community, but you can deal with your own family and raising your own children. The environment that the child is in will help influence in spite of the peers. And if you find something exciting for them, an example for me is Matthew Nagel, who is now a 6'6" huge hunk of man, who has always been tall. But he was raised in England, and so he had a non-competitive concept when he arrived. And he had a very difficult time, really, in the Velpo school system, because he was so tall and they wanted him to be in sport. But he came to Holden Village at about 10 on, and his love began to be his competition with the mountains. And he may have taken some chances on the mountains in a risk sort of way, but he became a really happy guy in the mountains and in cross-country skiing. And his whole Valparaiso community is still nuts about sport. But within it, he found his own being, even as his buddies go off and have scholarships in the javelin throw and in the discus. And I think it's an example of how the environment, and certainly his own family environment, could care less whether he'd been in competitive sports. They cared that he was happy. And that's what really is significant. But you have to help your kids to be happy in something besides football and baseball, because it's not natural. Yes, sir.
Well, I think the Association of Professional Athletes, Christian athletes, has done a lot to keep the perspective of sport where it belongs. I think they've done a lot with young kids. Professional football players have an association, and I think this goes into all the professional areas.
If any of you know of Athletes in Action, and you're really interested in sport, but you're also interested in donations, those gentlemen, and now the girls too, the girls aren't sacrificing so much because there aren't any pro sports, but there's a lot of men that are sacrificing great jobs for playing, particularly in basketball, on Athletes in Action. There's a book I have here, it's by a gal, so run your race, an athlete's view of God. And it's the same kind of idea of having worked for perfection. And I did have some slides of it last year, and I forgot to bring them this year, but I'll have them up here, and you may be interested in looking at it. And I think that athletes in action on the professional level has really demonstrated Christian living. And it becomes important to have a PLU kind of field hockey team, because it really does speak to Christianity. I think all of our church colleges need to be particularly careful of the kind of display, because although we're sinners, we also have an island, in a sense. And how we react and interact does become important, I think, in terms of the secular kind of world in it. Any comments on the fitness area? It's just about getting time for talking about fitness. I think in the fitness area, it's really for you people rather than your children, just speaking right to you, that fitness is important. It's important in Christian living. I think we're given our bodies as a temple of God, and that we do have a responsibility for life. And that this responsibility can help be filled in a really fun, joyful way. It's terribly neat to me that I can be serving God in the sense of my essential being and a fitness sort, and still get to climb to the top of the mountain, and that I'm helping in my total thought process. And that's what you need to think for yourself, for your renewal when you go out, is some kind of a commitment to yourself to get your body so that you enjoy life more, you can serve more, it's more helpful in your family. And everybody can do this. Even the diseased body can be as fit as it can. Straight exercise is one way, but another way is finding a sport that you can have the patience to learn. Badminton, for example. Everybody can learn badminton, except those with eye problems. Racquetball is a new exciting game. They're having in D.C. soccer leagues for women in age groups from 20 to 30, 30 to 40, not too many 40 to 50, but an age group kind of a sport life. And you can just do more in your family in terms of the fitness. And finally then, in terms of your children and movement, that I would ask that you try to expose them to many experiences, just as you want them to read all kinds of literature, have all kinds of music, have all kinds of experiences. Don't let them get caught up in one experience. If later in their lives they select one, that's fine, and work it to perfection. That would be fine with me, within perspective. But that they have an opportunity to learn about their bodies, to teach their bodies, and you help them to have their bodies to move, and that you make no difference between the female movement patterns and the male movement patterns in terms of sport. But then let them select. Football is not a girls' game. We have half the muscle power as men, and the same with wrestling. But that they can be exposed to all kinds of activities so that they then learn to enjoy it more. And then as I see it then, we can have, in fact, a sanity in sport through the sheer joy of movement. And that's what I want for all of you all.